gentlemen, to hour number two. Welcome back, everybody. It's the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinny Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And incidentally, the VinnyEastwoodShow.com. Can we turn the music down, please? Oh, yeah. Now, I had this idea. Of course, it's like I've been monitoring the chat room a little bit today. Man, I get angry sometimes, particularly when people criticize me. And you know what that is? That's called narcissism. Really. I fear what I might become in if I stop listening to the people who are critical at me. I really, really am afraid. Namely because I know who my father was. My father was violent, egotistical, aggressive, you know, creative, genius, brilliant guy, but still a bad guy. You know, even if you're doing good things, it doesn't mean you're not a bad person. And I feel that I am a bad guy, right? And I'm just trying to basically make up for the stupid and bad things that I've done in my life. This includes my thoughts. And I think we really all should kind of try and do that from time to time. The call lines are open, 218-339-8525, 218-339-8525. If you don't think of yourself as the bad guy, trust me, you probably should thinking like that, because then you'll probably turn into one, because you won't even be keeping an eye on yourself. You know what I'm saying? If I think I'm the good guy and I'm doing God's work or whatever, there's nothing to stop me from justifying my actions or killing people or whatever. It's all the way out through history. All the worst people have been the ones with the best intentions. So, you know, I've got the best intentions, but I acknowledge that I'm one of the worst people out there. You know, God, I'm a bad person. I'm a bad person. And I don't mean that as in, you know, I should be put in jail or anything like that. I mean this just as a concept that I've got in there, just something to stay away from, you know, a part of yourself that you don't want to let out. So you constantly draw attention to it just to make sure that that little beast is stuck in that cage still. You know, am I turning into some form of scumbag? Ah, that beast is still in the cage. Good, 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 good. Right, now, speaking of things that need to be kept an eye on, here's an article that I found that actually does have some relevance. Half of world's food is wasted, report. I wonder where half the world's food got all their drugs from. As much as half of all the world, all the food produced in the world, 2 billion tons worth, ends up being thrown away, a new UK-based report claims. The waste is caused by poor infrastructure and storage facilities, over-strict sell-by dates, get-one-free offers, and consumer fussiness. According to the Institution of Mechanical Engineers, each year countries around the world produce some 4 billion tons of food, but between 30% and 50% of this total, amounting to 1.2 to 2 billion tons, never gets eaten, says the global food waste not, want not. In the UK, up to 30% of vegetable crops are not harvested because their physical appearance fails to meet the exacting demands of consumers. Half the food purchased in Europe and the US is thrown away after it is bought, the report adds. Vast quantities of water are also wasted in global food production, it is claimed. Around 550 billion cubic meters of water is used to grow crops that never reach the consumer, according to the report. Producing 1 kilogram of meat is said to take 20 to 50 times more water than producing the same weight of vegetables. The demand for water in food production could reach 10 to 13 trillion cubic meters a year by 2050, the institution said. This is up to 3.5 times greater than the total amount of fresh water used by humans today, raising the specter of dangerous water shortages. What country has the world's largest pristine water reserves? It was Libya, wasn't it? Oh, well, had to invade them, I guess. and contaminate it with depleted uranium. Dr. Tim Fox, head of energy and environment at the Institution of Mechanical Engineers, said, quote, "The amount of food wasted and lost around the world is staggering. This food that could be used to feed the world's growing population as well as those in hunger today, it is also an unnecessary waste of the land, water and energy resources that were used in the production, processing and distribution of this food." Has anybody ever heard of pigs? In fact, there's a... Here's an interesting one for you. A friend of mine sent me a link to a guy who's... And normally, I don't watch people's videos. I don't read their articles or anything like that. Okay, I'm more concerned with talking to people, organizing stuff for the show. But this one I did look at. And dude's in America, and he's a pig farmer. He's got a whole bunch of pigs. And normally, his pigs get taken away for slaughter every now and again, and he gets a whole bunch of new ones. And to feed pigs, you can feed them anything, but if they're meant to be sold and slaughtered and you're supposed to have all that money and everything like that, dig this. The major slaughterers of pigs in the United States that this guy sells his pigs to have said that, oh, you and your pigs are not good enough for slaughter here anymore, okay? You're going to have to hold back. And he's taking them to court. He's taking every little for it. And dig this. He goes to court, right? Just as you do when you're naive, you think that the courts are on your side. And he finds out that he gets patted down. He gets metal detector checked. He gets pretty much everything but a cavity search before he gets let in. And then the defense for the government walk in with not less than 14 armed people. And they were for him. Because they were afraid of him criticizing the fact that they're not, you know, control of food. This is the most important thing that people should really be thinking about right now. Incidentally, this article comes up on a show when today I was talking about how irrelevant the news reporting is. You know, isn't that funny? You know, I love being wrong. You get to learn something for a change. And he's having struggling times trying to feed these pigs because he's run out of money because he can't get any money because he can't sell the pigs. And he's only got one little truck and he's... got equipment breaking down all over the place. And this is the exact same. You can echo this story all the way across the Midlands and across the United States in general. People's farms, particularly family farms, independent growers and things of that nature, are just being totally sabotaged and sweated. Okay? It's a corporate business monopoly tactic that was pioneered by the Rockefeller family during the old oil days, when they wanted to destroy their competition. What they would do is they would artificially lower their prices to something that the other people couldn't compete with in any way, shape, or form. If they refused, this is if they refused to sell out to the Rockefellers in the first place, then they would do what's known as sweating. You put your prices way down, they can't compete, and eventually their company goes under and the Rockefellers wind up buying it anyway. Okay. Same thing is happening with food here in the United States. Family farms, really, they must be protected. If you know anybody who's got a farm in your particular area, I can't explain to people or tell people what to do because I don't live there. Okay. I don't have the local knowledge. Only you do. But this guy that I'm referring to, I forget his name, I forget the company. I think it might have been my friend Pam Killeen who sent it to me. I should look it up. But he's calling for donations, not only in money, but also in food scraps. You know, he's going around to all these local restaurants, bakeries, things of that nature, picking up food so we can feed these pigs. And here we have a global food throwaway culture where like 2 billion tons of food is getting thrown away all the time. You know, Explain that one to me. Dude can't feed his pigs, and everybody's throwing out their fracking food. Where's all this food going? Goes into the tips. You know? It could be eaten by animals that are perhaps a little less picky than us. You know? You ever not wanted to finish a sandwich, and then you toss it off the table so that your dog can eat it kind of thing? You know, he's not worried about your saliva or anything like that. He'll wolf it down. I reckon that'd be a cool idea, really, if there was some form of voluntaristic organization who goes around collecting all the food scraps and things that everybody throws out. Or even a what I thought would be really choice would be perhaps a organic compost bin. Now, in New Zealand, we've got two types of bins. We have the regular rubbish, which you have to buy sacks for, like $2 a bag or something ridiculous like that. It's all under Agenda 21 protocol. And the second one is recycling. So you put your cans and your bottles and out in there. And also you can chuck out cardboard on the side of the road or whatever, and there's these big paper waste trucks that come out and pick that up. I reckon an organic waste collection, an organic food waste collection would be a good idea. Methinks, and do deals with pig farmers all over the country, or chick farmers, or something like that. There's plenty of farm animals that eat rotten, disgusting stuff that none of us would touch with a 10-foot barge pole. But I love it, ripping into it. You know, I remember we used to have these organic bins in Waiheke when I lived there, and I had maybe 2-3 dozen chooks, and you know, you toss in a whole bucket full of rotten, smelly, disgusting stuff. The chickens hoe into it, you know, scratching around with the little drumsticks and everything like that. But they love it, absolutely love it. You know, chooks are like they're feathered pigs, basically, in a large number of ways. So there's many ways to take care of this stuff, right? But we're just not bothering. Yeah, is that humanity's problem? Is that we just can't be bothered? So Bill Hicks said, you know, about people who are high, you know, smoking weed all the time. He says, look, when you're high, you do everything you normally do just as well. You just realize it's not worth the fracking effort. And I wonder how much has this mentality globally sort of come up, you know? May I at some point see a society that is not wasteful, is conscientious, perhaps energetic? May I ever see such a society where things are done and there's no harm caused to the environment? Nobody's compelled beyond their will to do things that are wrong or anything of that nature. You know, it'd be nice. It really would. And I like to think about ideals, really. If you don't think about ideals, you'll never achieve them. Much like if you never think about improving yourself, you'll never improve yourself, you know. I think it starts from the grave, from birth upwards. You know, the whole old mentality of government should take care of you from the cradle to grave. I don't think that's a good idea, really, because I think if you let the government protect you from your cradle, I'm certain that they'll probably be the ones that'll put you into an early grave, probably with a publicly financed health system of some description and getting euthanized. But imagine this. Truth of daycare, or truth of babysitting, or truth of elementary school, truth of high school, truth of university. If you had a look at the system as it currently works, you simply set up parallels, essentially do the exact opposite of whatever's going on. So I have a look at daycare, And what are they giving all the kids to eat and drink? Well, they're giving them sugar-laced cookies and homogenized milk that has all the enzymes bred out of it and no cream on it. Okay, well, what if we change it around, and instead of instead of kids just playing in the sandpit or something of that nature, what if you had a horticultural-based childcare? This is what I was thinking about yesterday. As a possible career choice for my girlfriend Sarah, because she loves kids and she loves plants and things like that. And I'm always trying to solve people's problems for them. probably one of my biggest faults of why people tell me to shut up. But I reckon that would be cool, because you could send your kids there and they would be with nice, caring, nurturing individuals who would also at the same time be doing gardening, growing carrots and cabbages and tomatoes and what have you. And they'd actually get the kids hands-on, you know, hands in the dirt and all of that kind of stuff, getting them exposed to all of that bacteria so their immune systems can start up. And also they'd really have a relationship with food. And what's happened, the problem is in America, or at least so my producer tells me, is that people don't have contact with the production of food anymore. They think that tomatoes come out of a bag, or that there's no such thing as a drought in America because they can purchase Coca-Cola at the local McDonald's still, you know? Like, so detached are we from what goes into our bodies, what goes into our minds, that we don't have any idea really what's going on anymore. So if you wanted to create a society to counteract that, again, you've got to start from the ground up. You've got to teach children from as early an age as possible to have contact with the land and their food and know where things come from. I think that would be pretty cool. They'd learn some valuable skills. I imagine that the child obesity problem would wane somewhat if such a system existed. But then where do you go from there? Because I mean, when you're a baby and you're just doing childcare and stuff, what have they got on the walls? They've got all these little toys, plastics, and little times tables and things on the walls there. And these are all just kind of I don't know. Where's the education here? And in terms of education, it just really translates as indoctrination, doesn't it? I don't know how to teach anybody anything without indoctrinating them into the way that I think. Unless you tell them, don't listen to me. Think for yourself. You listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. We'll be right back. Everybody, oh yeah, you listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. I would really love some callers, but you know, I've been talking with a number of other radio show hosts recently, and they ask me, Vinnie, do you get callers when you ask for them? It's like, nah, bro. People just don't like calling in for some reason, and it's like we're talking about this. In the chat room here, one of the listeners asked me, Vinny, am I still smoking weed? Vinny, are you still smoking weed? And I go, nah, I stopped about a week ago, stopped the cigarettes too. And they're like, why? Weed's good for you. And they go, no kidding. You know, I didn't say exactly no kidding, but, you know, it's like, I don't like being too comfortable. I mean, comfort and having a stress-free lifestyle, sure, you know, there's merits to that. But if that's the only thing that you're doing, if you only ever experience comfort, leisure, pleasure, that kind of thing, it means you're not being challenged, okay? Like Fredo, my mate, I think it's the Middle Chamber's show is on American Freedom Radio on Saturdays. He told me about when he was a boy, or a young man rather, hanging out with these really rich people that would come into town and live in the big mansions and things like that. Their first car was a limousine with a driver, so they don't know how to drive. They don't know. They barely even know how to tie their own shoelaces. They're their own personal chefs. They don't know how to cook. They've bluffed their way through high school and things like that. Basically, these people have never had any challenge in their lives. So you throw them into the wilderness or anything like that, they're dead. They're weak. They're pathetic. You know, they've got all this power. They've got all these resources, but they've actually really got nothing. You know, and that's what I mean about getting outside your comfort zone. I've been so comfortable getting high on marijuana that I thought to myself, you know what? I want to know what it's like without it. You know, like really without it. I don't want to do it anymore. And maybe somebody noticed I've changed up my mentality a little bit since coming back on the radio this year. Because I'm not high anymore. Really, I was getting too comfortable, and I want to change that up a little bit. So we've got a caller in the line here, ironically. 602 area code, you're on the air.
Hello, this is Ivan from Phoenix.
Ivan from Phoenix, how are you, my friend?
Okay, I'm not a regular listener to your show. I catch once in a while when you have some interesting guests. I watch your video shows online. But I was listening to this AFR online, listening to your show, and I heard you mention how not too many people call into these shows, and that's pretty ironic because that's the same thing that happens with, like, meetup groups that I have. A lot of members, but when it comes time to show up and participate, only a handful do.
Yeah, it's true, eh? Yeah. Have you ever been to a protest before?
No. Well, not really participating, but when the Occupy Phoenix was going on, I drove down there just to get a look to see what the crowd was like. So I wasn't in there chanting and with signs, but just gauging to see what people were putting out there. And I wasn't too impressed. It's like everybody's going in their own directions, religion here and government there and money here. It was like, no unity, but... That's as close to a protest as I've been.
Mm. I've been to hundreds. Maybe that's a bit of a high number. Maybe I'm making a hyperbole on purpose. But what I've noticed is you go to the Facebook event groups, right? And the amount of people who say that they're coming is usually between 2 and 10 times larger than the amount of people who actually show up. You know what I'm saying? And I think that lesson goes for everything. You notice how barely anybody shows up? You know, I mean, really shows up, like do what they say they'll do, you know, that kind of thing. Have you noticed that?
Right. Yeah, I have. I call into a Mark Passio's show pretty regular now, What on Earth is Happening, and I kind of exchange emails with him now and then about the meetups, and he's mentioned the same thing out in Philadelphia. He gets... 20-30 RSVPs, but only about 5 or 10 show up. So it's pretty interesting how all this supposed truth movement is going on, but when it actually comes time to move, not too many people are moving.
Yeah. Are you familiar with the term mollycoddling?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think just the word. They say, you know, one thing, but do another. Let me put in a quick plug here, since I might have, maybe a couple hundred people listening. I have a website that Mark Passio has mentioned on his website, his talk show also, Free Your Mind AZ, since I'm in Phoenix, Arizona. I figure I'll try and free some minds here in Arizona. I got a couple of visits a day, and, you know, not over in the hundreds, but maybe when the CIA or FBI start tapping in, that's when I get the 300 hits, which I noticed after the Sandy Hook shooting. Once that police, whatever investigator, announced that there all the rumor mills online were going to start being investigated and prosecuted, that's when my website received like 300 visits. So that's pretty interesting.
Well, so they're going to start investigating people who propose alternative theories to major news stories, right? Basically, if you don't buy the official story, you'll be treated as a criminal.
Right, that's what it said. If it doesn't come from the police investigators that are on the news right there, what they say, if it's different from that, and you're posting it on like Facebook or Twitter or whatever, then, you know, they're going to investigate and prosecute for, I guess, you know, spreading rumors, I guess.
Well, police have never lied before, have they?
No, they don't.
I remember when I got arrested for selling weed in university, right? And I admitted everything, absolutely everything. Even when they came through the door, I gave them my bag of you know, foil-wrapped weed and gave it to them, you know, my baggies, all my leftover stalks, my personal stash and everything like that. And I said, yes, I'm a drug dealer and I've been doing it for 8 months and I've been selling about an ounce a week. And, you know, just unprecedented naivete, basically. Full-on admission of guilt. You know, past and present, future, that kind of thing. And they still made up evidence in court against me.
Wow.
Unbelievable. And it's like, I remember what my friend Grace Hayden says. She's a private investigator here in New Zealand, Ivan. And she was a police prosecuting sergeant for 15 years. And she said to me, New Zealand police are so corrupt that you will either become corrupt or you will leave. And I remember my friend in Hamilton got arrested, just stupid reason. You know how some people are doing the free man thing and they don't want to pay their taxes or they're not signing forms or whatever properly or paying their parking fines and they're arguing them in court, whatever. Well, they're arresting them based on one of these things. And he managed to get a message to me. So I called the police station while they had him in the cells and pretended to be a credible journalist and talked about how we expose police corruption and everything like that with this officer on the line. And I said to the police officer, not that you're corrupt or anything, you know, this is just what I do. And then the guy kind of goes, makes his excuses, hangs up the phone on me. And then I hear from my mate Jeff later on that the cop came to him and said, oh, I had this guy, this friend of yours on the phone who accusing me of being corrupt. And I'm like, you corrupt, motherfucker. They can't help themselves. They can't help themselves. You know, truth stranger than fiction, you know. So, sometimes I've got to – even notice that sometimes everybody wants to write a book about something, about the stupid, crazy stuff that they've seen in their life, you know.
Hey, since you mentioned truth stranger than fiction, this new movie that's out now that's getting all this hoopla, this Zero Dark Thirty, that's supposed to be the exact way based on the true story of how Osama bin Laden got killed. I watched that movie 2.5 hours. Boring as hell, just a bunch of talking, jab, a little torture here and there, and the last half hour is when they do this supposed storm on Bin Laden. But once the movie finished, I kept thinking in my mind, you create the myth, you write it as fact, and it'll be remembered as history. And that's what I see with this, because now today the Academy Award nominations came out for the American entertainment industry, the big movie hoopla. And this film is all over the place, picture and an actress and writing and all this stuff. When it's one of the boringest films I've seen, and yet, you know, they're just trying to put into the public consciousness that, look, there's a movie about it. It's based on a true story. This is exactly what happened. And it even got an Academy Award now. So that's, you know, pretty interesting that you say about myth and fiction and reality. That's what's going on now.
Do you believe that the American people now more highly prize good fiction over reality?
Well, look at the TV that they watch, reality TV. Even films now are kind of made, you know, with like a reality feel to them. You know, these horror movies, Paranormal Activity and everything, like if it's an actual handheld camera. And I've come across people that watch these films and ask, you mean that wasn't real? I was like, no, it was a movie made to make you think that it was real, and apparently it worked. So right now, society, people are detached from what is real and what isn't. So forget it. They're getting taken advantage of very easily.
I wonder if this has been played out before in history. Like, didn't the Romans distract everybody with games, you know, gladiatorial combat and stuff like that when the empire was about to collapse? And right. All the young people were all into death, and they really loved it. You know, isn't that what's happening today?
Yeah, bread and circuses. That's why you have, you know, the video games just killing each other, Call of Duty, and, oh, I killed that guy nicely. That was a cool kill. And watching UFC guys, you know, beating each other senseless in a ring. Like, oh, this is awesome. So, yeah, that's where they're at today.
You know, it would be cool to make a fictional truther stuff. You know, like a truther game, like Call of Scumbaggery.
yeah,
where you know you would be recruited.
Scumbaggery.
Well, you would be recruited by the Illuminati in the game or something like that, and you'd have to go out. You know, like in Grand Theft Auto, how you're supposed to go out and run missions and shoot hookers and stuff like that. You know, it's real violent, horrific, or whatever. But it's just a criminal operating on his own. It'd be interesting if there was a game like that. If you were a criminal actually working for the biggest criminal syndicate in the world that actually runs everything, runs all the politicians and that sort of thing, in order to get things, and like there would be, you know how in some games you get experience points, you know, like in this game you would get scumbaggery points. But the worst, more criminality type behavior that you would get, the higher your scumbaggery level would get. Like I'm a 35th degree scumbaggery agent or something of that nature, and your goal is to get up to such a level of scumbaggery that your scumbaggery would never be able to be questioned by the rest of the criminal underground, and you become the unofficial head of the syndicate kind of thing. I reckon that'd be quite a fun game.
There you go. You know what? Get a hold of Peter Jackson. I think he's one of your buddies down there in New Zealand. They have their digital studios, that Weta Productions, whatever. They do video games. They might come up with something like that.
Well, see, and movies would be good too, you know, like a James Bond film called Quantum of Scumbaggery.
There you go, yeah.
I think we're just going to really have fun with all of this. I mean, what do you do for a career, Ivan? I mean, if you don't mind me asking.
No, I work for the post office behind the scenes, sorting mail. And so that gives, you know, all I really need to do is push buttons on machines and load mail. So I really don't have to think much. So I use my iPod and upload a bunch of David Icke, Michael Tesserian, John Irvin, Gnostic Media, Michael, Mark Passios, whatever is happening, and I just have a blast just learning. I get paid to learn, and then I use the post office's money, and I create a website, I set up meetup groups, I make copies of DVDs and hand them out, and just try and spread this information and wake up people, which is very difficult because a lot of people just want to watch American Idol or Dancing with the Stars or, you know, their football games, and it's like, wow, you know, people just don't care.
Well, look at it this way. You care, and you know that those people who don't care don't matter. Sheep always follow one shepherd or the other, regardless of whether or not that shepherd is leading them into the slaughterhouse or to greener pastures. Ivan, thank you very much for your call. And to be honest, thank you for doing what you do. Work in a slave job, and regardless of the fact that you're stuck there, you've actually taken the initiative to still obtain knowledge and wisdom while doing it. That's brilliant, bro. Keep it up. And thank you for your call. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Yeah. And no one like me. Yeah. 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 Congratulations. You made it. Welcome to the Crusader. been a long time coming, yo. Yeah. But I'm here now. So what you wanna do? How many dudes you really know can flow like this, like this, like this? Let's do it. How many dudes you know vote like this? How many dudes you know flow like this? Not many, if any, not many, if any. How many dudes you know got the skills to go and rock a show like this? I don't know
anybody.
Check to the mic, check.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie East, which was the final segment here. I would love to get some callers and that last caller, Ivan, I actually kind of really enjoyed that. And it reminds me of one of my listeners, I think maybe earlier on in the career, back in 2010, they told me that they were being very naughty, that they had a desk job, and they would sit in their cubicle all day, right? And the whole time while they're doing all their work, they would be listening to the Vinnie Eastwood show or other shows on American Freedom Radio, things like that. And I was going, you know what? Sometimes it is good to be naughty. This is like any way you can, you know, whatever you can do. If what was I talking about the other day? Anthony Robbins, you know that guy who's the motivational speaking, you know, personal power or whatever. Him and a number of other, those inspirational people have said similar things. I think it was my mate Jono was telling me about this, is that people have got a kind of crisis of faith in themselves, you know, like they don't do things because they don't believe they'll be able to do them. And in so doing, they can't do things. You know what I'm saying? Isn't that funny? You don't need to stop anybody from doing anything these days because they'll just stop themselves because they lack faith in themselves. And I thought that was quite an interesting concept. I was thinking back to when I started doing all this. I'm not sure if it was faith in myself that started me off doing this. I think it was just because I hated being a slave and I was really afraid. Like, deathly afraid of getting exterminated. I couldn't do my job. I really hated my boss. It's just a person invading my privacy and being fired and quit jobs before for similar reasons. And it was like it happened three times in a row to me, you know, bad job after bad job after bad job. And even though I was doing really good at them, I couldn't do them. You know, didn't want to. Just there's more to life than doing what other people want you to do in life. You know what I mean? You know, it's my life. I want to do something that makes me happy, something that is fulfilling. You know, I want to be happy. Ultimately, I don't want to have a hard life anymore. I don't want to have to struggle. I don't want to have to mess around with unpleasant, toxic people and that kind of thing. And I think we all feel that way, especially when you're surrounded by workmates who don't get it. And as truth is, we tend to withdraw because it's like you hear these people talking about nattering about la, 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 what they saw on TV last night or something like that. And you're like, man, that's boring. I don't want to be part of that conversation. Is there any better conversation I can have around here? So you look around the company for somebody to talk to and you find out that there's nobody to talk to about anything interesting. So it's like, Jesus, where do I go? What do I do? And it's just like, oh man, that's pretty sad, isn't it? It's pretty sad. So you got to just go, well, frack it. You know, I think those are the two most freeing words in the entire English language. Frack it. I'm going to do what I feel like doing. I'm going to do what I want to do. To hell with everybody. To hell with what everybody else thinks. This is my life. I will live it how I choose, thank you very much, and unless I'm hurting somebody or damaging their property, nobody should be able to tell me what to do otherwise. You know? Am I killing myself? Maybe. But at least I ain't killing anybody else. I've got my own choices. I can, you know, mainline heroin into my freaking eyeballs if I want to. Right? Nobody should be able to stop me. But the problem is, you've got all these people who don't really have a life, right? Like, what are they called? Like, and of course, that's very judgmental of me, isn't it? I should probably stop doing that. But there are people out there who are, what's the term? Busybodies, you know? Like big brother busybodies who just wanted to get into everybody else's business, sticking their nose in where it doesn't belong. Kind of like it's like being in a some sort of a social police checkpoint, you know? You're just going along, driving along in a normal route or whatever, and some rude scumbag sticks a breathalyzer in your face. You know, you're not drinking. You're not speeding. You're not doing anything. He shouldn't stop me. He shouldn't tell me to enter my name and address into this. Who is this person who wants my name and address? Why is it that I'm walking down the street, somebody asks me for my name and address, I can say yes or no, but some person in a fracking uniform does it somehow? I'm being a criminal by not wanting him to know, by saying that he doesn't need to know, right? And it's not like expectations of others and what they should do to me in my life and how they should treat me. I think it really comes down to what are your expectations of yourself, you know? Like, I reckon people should stop judging others all the time. When I was smoking, for example, I got heaps of crap from my missus and my brother when he came over from Tahiti. Oh, dirty smoker, or any of this kind of thing. You know, people reckon that they've got a right to criticize you when you're just going about your business. Why? You know, my sister, who's severely overweight, was criticizing me about smoking. And I said to her, look, listen, you know what this reminds me of? This reminds me of a scene in the movie Super Size Me, right? Documentary about the guy who ate McDonald's breakfast, lunch, and dinner for a month, right? And there's a part in that movie where one of the interviewees says, you know what? Wouldn't it be interesting if one day it was socially acceptable to publicly hector fat people in the same way that smokers are publicly hectored? You know, you think about this in a restaurant and guy lights up and they go, oh, don't you know how bad that is for your health? And the smoker, instead of going, frack you, is all bashed and goes, you know, I tried to quit and I'll try to quit again, you know, you're right, and all that kind of stuff. And right next to him is a fat woman, you know, really, really huge woman. And would it be okay for them to say, look, you fat pig, don't you know how dangerous it is to be that overweight? Don't you dare get a second dessert. All right? Why don't you go home and do some sit-ups or aerobics or something like that? That's really offensive to say these days. Right? As if being fat is a disease. I'm fat. I've got man boobies. I was around my producer's house the other day, and his wife told me, well, Vinny, I never thought of you as fat. And I pulled up my shirt and produced this massive, big, fat, hairy belly, and I just go, look at this. This is not lean. This is not sexy. Okay? And I think it's just been in the last week or so, every day, without fail, I have been lifting weights. I have been playing hacky sack outside with my shirt off in the sun. Okay, I'm getting a tan. I'm sweating every day, and I'm getting stronger. And I am and usually this has been a good replacement for the cigarettes, I think, because when you're working out, you get this huge endorphin rush. It's very similar to smoking, admittedly, and it's been quite fun. Really, doing all this exercise, like it took me. I've never been skinny my entire life. Never been hot, you know. Always found it really difficult to get a girlfriend and things like that, because the people are really shallow in general. You know, they don't want to like you just based on your personality or anything like that. They want the whole package. People really want it all. And that's really what I want to do. I want the whole package, but not so other people will like me. I want it so that I can like myself. I still like myself anyway, but I know that I can be better. I know that I can be happier. I know that I can be healthier. I know that I can be wealthier. And it is actually of benefit to me psychologically to be improving myself every day and seeing that improvement. Do you understand what I mean when I say that? How often we stagnate and we don't we're not improving ourselves is what I'm saying, or we're not improving our society. Okay, and it all starts from within. You know, just because there's a whole bunch of stuff wrong with society doesn't mean there's nothing wrong with you. We've got to sort out our own problems and quit messing around. You know, life is too short to be what you despised, to look in the mirror and feel disgusted at what you see, as I do. I don't want to feel that way anymore. I want to change. I am doing it, little by little, and I want to be something wonderful that I never have been before in my life. I want to improve, and I don't think I'll rest until I can look at myself in the mirror and go, you know what? I look great. I really do. And feel good about myself in that respect. I've done plenty of other good things in my life, but this is the one thing that I haven't done, so that's what I'm going to do now. Thank you very much for listening, ladies and gentlemen. See you again sometime.